Let the show begin. You guys have fun out there today.
Hello, and welcome to New Shooter Canada. Please remember that the show's content is simply the opinions of the hosts and our guests. So without delay, let me introduce our hosts, George, Tom, and Kelly.
Hello and welcome to episode 64 of New Shooter Canada. This week we have Rick from Fine Art Solution Training joining us and talking about training in the London area. And before we get to that, let's start off with what we did in guns. And since we have a guest, I'll kick it off to Rick to start us off. Rick, what did you do in guns?
Thanks, George. This week I worked on projectiles coming out of a three-week-old baby, so that kind of occupied most of my time.
Oh, that's going to go down as the most epic line on the show.
Yeah, I didn't know projectile stuff was even possible coming out of a baby, but yes, it was. So
welcome to Parenthood.
And it comes at both ends.
Yeah, it does. I needed some safety goggles and a new shirt afterwards, so I learned my lesson.
Well, it's not too bad right now. It's once they go on solid food that it becomes toxic waste.
Yeah.
Leave it to Thomas to talk about. Anyways.
Other than that, can I talk about archery for like a half an hour?
Please, no. No.
All right, sorry, Trevor. I just had to throw that in there. But other than that, I've just been a lot of quiet time at 3 o'clock in the morning when the little guy's sleeping and just kind of working on content for the website. I should be going live in January and getting lots of information and stuff for people to kind of go up there and sponge up some of that knowledge and some of my tips and tricks I've kind of learned from different people and some odd opinions that I come up with myself that people might be interested in, but not too political, just family training stuff and getting knowledge out there. And yeah, that's about it. And that little guy's taking out a lot of my time, so it's I'm not complaining. He's a quite little guy, so he'll be a good shooter when he gets older.
Awesome. I'll go next since I did nothing.
Again?
Really?
Why are we surprised?
Now, anyone that follows me on Facebook knows, and I think I mentioned it last show, that I finally got my license.
But congratulations, by the way.
Thank you very much. But to get my diploma from the trucking school, I still had 26 hours of driving I had to complete. So that's what I did for the last 3-4 days, is just drive a big truck and backing it and different techniques and all that sort of stuff. So I've got some time off work, so I'm hoping this week I got to go do some medical and drug testing for my license and that for my job. And
well, the P-test.
Yep, do the P-test. That's Monday, and then I've got some time off, so I'm hopefully doing lots of shooting, bang, bang, pew, pew, pew.
Good for you.
So.
You deserve it.
And, yeah, so.
You can get your 22 running then.
Yeah, get my 22 running. Get my M22. Get it smoking smooth and fast. And
fix okay. That slide release.
How are you going to do that, by the way?
Fix the slide release?
Mm-hmm.
I think it's just dirty. So I'm going to buy some brake cleaner and then just spray a bunch of brake cleaner kind of into it and see what happens and cross my fingers and hope it works.
And if that doesn't work, you're going to take it to a gunsmith?
Nope. Yeah, I'm gonna take it to the University of YouTube gunsmithing.
Excellent.
Well, it is a known problem with that gun, so there's probably an easy fix for it.
Yeah, I've looked into it, and it's you gotta do something.
Buy a new gun.
I'm not buying a new gun. I love that gun. I love
it's
that.
It's an easy
gun.
Fix. Buy a new gun.
Love that gun.
I know.
Hey, I saw a Glock 22 for sale at the range today with 4 mags, $450, George.
Oh, that's a good price.
Mm-hmm.
It's really good.
Hmm.
So.
Okay.
Mr. Thomas.
What I did today, I put the spark on my AR a couple months ago, and I still haven't actually went to the range to sight it in, so I took it up today. And it was kind of wet and chilly, but the covering point was covered. And I wanted to practice my my standing with the sling, because I haven't actually shot anything with the sling since last March. I did okay. I sighted it, and that took about 30 rounds to get it dialed in on paper because it was way, way off.
Yeah.
But I did two targets with the sling, and I scored 89 and 90. So it's not bad, 1:55 seconds. So it was a practice, and not too bad. I'm not too upset with it. The K22 X-Trim Saga. I haven't talked about this yet. When I ordered the Grand Power, NAS didn't have it in stock, so they had to order it from the distributor. So the distributor shipped them the gun, and they shipped it directly to me. But when I opened the case, it wasn't a new gun. The distributor sent me one of the demo guns that they use at the ranges for test firing it. So I was I didn't look at it right away when I got it. I just took a couple pictures, threw it back in this case, threw it in the safe because I wasn't supposed to play with it to Christmas anyway. But when I looked at it, I realized that it wasn't a new gun, and I contacted the retailer, and he messaged me right away. And then about 45 minutes later, I got a call from the distributor directly. So they both profusely apologized. The new gun is on the way, and I'm shipping out the old gun on Monday, or doing the transfer on Monday. So hopefully I should get the K22 in my safe by Christmas. That's all that I care about. But besides that, that's the only shooting I've done. Just the Glock, or the, sorry, the Glock. Oh my God.
Oh my goodness, you need to go wash your mouth out. Oh, and not with like bar soap, with liquid soap.
Oh, brake cleaner. I got that awful taste in my mouth now. Yeah, the only thing I've shot was the AR, and that was it. But I discovered something on the AR I didn't know, the stupid Vortex Spark. I get up there, and I was shooting like a foot low and 3 or 4 inches to the right. And I'm thinking, oh man, I forgot my screwdrivers. I'm going to adjust this stupid thing because it's a real small screw and I didn't have any coins in my pocket. And I look at the top of the turret, and the turret actually has a little screwdriver built into the turret. So when you, and they're on wires. When you take the turret, the cap off, you can turn it upside down and it's an instant screwdriver. I've had that thing for 3 or 4 months and I never realized there were turret adjustments in the cap. So
you didn't realize it?
I never saw it.
No. And that's a nice AR, by the way. We were looking at the picture. It's very nicely AR.
I got to shoot it. It is a very nice AR.
Did you?
Yeah.
He won't let me shoot his AR.
2 years ago.
That was
ago.
The first AR you ever shot.
It was. Yeah. And that led me to my build.
And you actually had some nice shooting. I saw your target as well.
Oh, thank you.
Yeah. So, yeah. Good job.
Now I got to shoot some prone and some sitting. But the standing was my weak point, so that's what I wanted to practice on.
Yeah.
Sweet. All right, that brings us to Kelly.
So I went to SFRC yesterday, and we did some Christmas shopping, which was kind of difficult to do because Kevin was standing there. So he was buying Christmas stuff for me, and I was buying Christmas stuff for him.
Quick, turn your head.
Yeah, so he had to go to one point of the store so I could buy his, and then I saw what he was buying me, so it was fine. This isn't part of the Christmas. He bought a new gun. He bought one of the digital camo 10/22s. So yeah, he wants to build a new 10/22 to take down to Michigan, and he ordered a Magpul stock. It was the X-22 stock, and he's going to actually put that onto the 10/22 when it comes. He had to order that from Red Deer. Because nobody else had any, so it's getting shipped here. It's in the mail someplace.
What are they charging for it?
He got a good deal on it. It was $195, so which is really good because it's anywhere from. I looked online and it's anywhere from about $199 to $225, so that's about average. So, but it's very limited, and my dogs are fighting right now. So, anyways, so he ordered that from Red Deer. It's in the mail. Right now it's being shipped to him, so he's waiting for it, and he's pretty happy. We went out yesterday when we were at SFRC, I was talking to Marcy. They still have a couple of the Colt Canada IURs, they were part of that package. Do you guys remember when Colt Canada did them up for the Danish military there, and the Danish military didn't want them because they were 15.7 as opposed to 16?
Yeah, they had a bunch come back.
Yeah, so they rejected them basically because of the fact that they were too short. So they're selling them at a really good price. She was trying to sell me one. She was trying to sell me this one of the stripped uppers. So they're $599 for that. And So, yeah, Kevin really would like one, but he's not getting one. He wants an actual complete gun. They were willing to sell me one for $15.99, so with the DeMacco lower on it. So,
are you sure it was a stripped upper for $5.99?
Yep, stripped upper $5.99.
Because that's like ridiculously expensive.
Not really.
No.
Seriously, because I paid 168 for my NEA upper, and I can't, like, what would make the Colt Canada upper so fantastically superior that you would pay that for $600 for a stripped upper?
I don't know.
Well, it doesn't have the charging handle on the and the bolt, if I remember, Kelly. I'm not
100%. No, it doesn't. If you got one with the charging handle and the bolt, is $8.99.
Now that stripped upper, does that come with a barrel?
Oh, yeah, yeah, it's barrel, yeah. The handguard.
Okay.
And the upper receiver, it just doesn't have the bolt or the bolt catch, I remember.
Right. Yeah, but that's not a stripped upper, though, if it comes with a barrel, does it? Is it? Because my upper is just the upper.
It's an incomplete upper, I would say. I wouldn't say stripped if it has the barrel, but...
Yeah. So, anyways. So that was yesterday. Today, I went to the range, and today we just decided we were going to bring the 10-22s. Kevin brought a couple of his pistols as well, but I just brought my 10-22. So we worked on those. Kevin played around with his brand new gun as well, and he really liked it. He got really good groupings with it. He tried a couple of different types of ammo in that too. He likes all of the ammo, did really, really well in it. So it was good. He's going to put some new things on it, like the extended mag release and also the new bolt release when he gets back home, and then also the new stock as well. So we'll see what happens when we get down to Michigan, if he's going to shoot that or if I am. Anyways, kidding.
Now, is he going to keep the stock barrel on it?
Yeah, he is going to keep the stock barrel. He's trying. What he's going to do is, I think he's even going to spray paint everything or get it. Everything's flat dark earth or camo. So it's, yeah. Anyways. And also, we picked up some of that Aguila 22, the Super Colibri. Is it Colibri? Colibri? Anyways, it's the powderless. It's the powderless 22 ammo. It only fires with a primer. So
we does it function in the MP22.
It functions in the MP22, but it doesn't because of the fact that it doesn't have any powder in it. It doesn't, excuse me, cycle. So you have to actually manually cycle through it. But
okay, so it didn't function in an MP22. Well,
no, you know what I mean. Anyways.
This show's off to a great start.
Now, is that safe to use in a rifled barrel? Because if it just has the, you might get a squib load.
Yeah, so it's only pistol. We were testing it out to see how many layers of carbon would it go through. We put up 8 or 9 layers, and it was still going through fine. We did it at 1 meter, 3 meters, 5 meters, and 10 meters, and it was still going through fine at 10 meters, through 10 layers, or 8 or 9, 10 layers of cardboard. And then we started shooting the wood that was on the target stand, but it wouldn't go through that. So yeah.
It'd probably be nice in a revolver.
We were talking about that, yeah, because, you know, revolver, you don't have to actually eject the casings every time, so a revolver would be really cool. Anyways, that's it. And it was really, it was really, really cold, so, and it sucked. So I wore my fingerless gloves and all that, and they didn't work well. I got wet, so I kind of whined and we came home. So you know what? I hadn't actually really, really, really cleaned my 22 since my 10-22 since maple seed, I guess, and had to take everything apart. There was so much carbon and so much lead in the it was horrible. Yep.
So the scope had to come off again.
Scope had to come off. Rail had to come off. Everything had to come out. Yep. So it's clean as a whistle now. Yep.
Cool. I haven't touched mine. My AR is still sitting in the case in the living room.
Well, everything got wet because we had mixed precipitation. We had water, water. Well, it is water. We had rain, and it's kind of like, I know.
But you guys were just shooting the 22s. Weren't shooting any center fires?
No, we were just shooting the 22s.
But why didn't you use the indoor range? That way you wouldn't have gotten wet.
Yeah, no. Yeah, we don't shoot in the indoor range. That's for wusses, Thomas. Yeah. No, I asked him that. I said, maybe we should have shot in the indoor range. He goes, no. Sorry.
This is actually the first time I didn't shoot at the indoor range because I can't shoot the AR indoors. So.
Well, yeah, you're not allowed.
No, it punch holes for the backstop. So.
Yeah.
All right. Exactly.
Guns in the news. So this is just a follow-up. A couple of months ago, we talked about a Wisconsin gun shop that was charged for doing a straw purchase. So a Wisconsin gun shop will pay $1 million to settle a lawsuit in which a jury found it negligently sold a gun used to injure two Milwaukee police officers, the store's attorney said. The settlement eliminates what was expected to be a years-long appeal of an October verdict in which the jury's awarded Officer Brian Norberg and former Officer Graham Kernish nearly $6 million. The jury found that the Badger gun and its owner negligently sold the gun to a straw buyer, someone buying a gun for someone else who cannot legally purchase one.
Okay. Okay, so I guess we're going straight to story two. We're not going to actually really talk about it, are
we? Well, we can if you want. If you sell a gun, or if you buy a gun and give it to somebody else, you mm-hmm. are legally and financially responsible for what happens with that gun.
That's the way it should be.
Yeah. That's what they call a straw purchase. So mm-hmm. don't sell a gun to anybody who's not licensed to have that firearm.
Yeah, because we're legally obligated to ensure that we're selling it to somebody who is able to have it. Right?
And up here, you can actually, if somebody gives you a license, you can actually call the firearm center and verify that it is a valid license. Mm-hmm. Just takes a phone call.
Mm-hmm.
You don't have to, but it's common sense that you do.
Yeah. All right, so story number two, gun control advocates praise Quebec's move to create firearms registry. So as we all know, Quebec's creating a gun registry, or they're looking to. So this is the story about that. Quebec has decided to set its own course on gun control by creating a provincial firearms registry, filling the void left by the scrapping of Ottawa's a national database 3 years ago. The province tabled legislation on Thursday to set up the long gun database largely from scratch. The Coulard government believes it can avoid the massive cost escalations associated with Ottawa's ill-fated registry, the price tag of which was pegged at $1 billion. The government estimates the Made in Quebec model will cost $17 million to set up and $5 million annually to maintain. We can always do better, and we can always learn from what was done elsewhere, Premier Philippe Coulard said. We have learned lessons that will ensure us that costs will be limited. The province regulations fall under administrative law, so those who run afoul of it will face penalties of up to $5,000 for individuals, but no criminal sanctions, unlike the provisions for the former federal law. Quebec is also hoping for a regulation. Its regulations will remove some of the irritants to hunters and other owners in the province's 1.6 million non-restricted firearms. Owners will be able to register for free online. Without any fees, there will be no more objections for hunters, Public Safety Minister Pierre Moreau said. I think it will make the registration very efficient. The goal of the registry, he said, is to identify who owns firearms and where the weapons are. He said, police support the database because the information helps them determine whether weapons are present and when they respond to a call. Yeah. Opposition to the legislation is already forming. A Quebec-based lawyer representing Canada's National Firearms Association said the group will do everything it can to prevent this from becoming law. Public Safety Minister Pierre Moreau said that He is in talks with the federal Liberal government about recovering whatever is left of its database after Ottawa set out to destroy the information about the long gun rent owners that had been collected. Ottawa has issued a court order this year to preserve registry records for Quebec, although there are questions over whether the data remained up to date. So, this is a pretty big...
The only positive out of this big giant steaming turd is that
eloquently put
is that's about the nicest way I could clean up the language. Is it's going to be administration penalties, not
criminal.
That's right. About the only redeeming thing, you know. And I'm glad we're covering this in a way, because I'd love to come back 2-3 years after the registry is in place and review this, because they're claiming it's going to cost $17 million with an annual maintenance of $5 million. Did we not hear the same sort of rubbish about the federal?
Was it McClellan that said that? It was going to cost $30 million a year to operate?
Like, this is what gets me, is that we had non-gun owners screaming, get rid of the gun registry, because it... When the general public found out it was costing $1 billion and it wasn't really doing a whole lot of anything, they're like, "Well, why am I paying for this? I don't own guns. This is ridiculous."
So one of the things that we do know is anytime we buy a gun, it's registered, and whoever sells it to us is registered. Like, there's a paper trail.
Well, everybody has a license, so when the police show up to your house, they're gonna know that there's a licensed firearm owner at that residence. They already know that there's going to be guns there. They don't specifically have to know, well, John Doe has 4 rifles, 3 shotguns. They know when they do a call that that is your residence, there are going to be guns. So, right. And this whole thing being no more objections from hunters. Like, I like how he worded that. Right. Without any fees, there'll be no more objections. They've done polls. 96% of Quebecers do not want this.
Right.
Only the elite in Montreal and Quebec City that want this. The public doesn't want it. The politicians want it.
And the other thing is, yeah, as if they're going to actually want to register.
Yeah.
Even though it's free.
I don't think people will.
They can do it online, but I don't think a lot of people will. The only guns that aren't registered are going to be the ones that are illegal anyway, so.
Yep.
Just saying.
I can't see how they're even going to enforce it, because gun laws are federal, not provincial. So how can they make a provincial law that can only be enforced federally?
I don't know. Anyways, I thought we should talk about it because of the fact that it was tabled on Thursday. So, and it's,
Well, let's hope our Quebec brothers and sisters put up a big stink over this, because I'm sure they are.
Do you want to follow up with the eco?
You said it.
No. Ecotech?
Go, George.
All right. I'm glad the lead host is being led. Just a follow up on the Ecotech issues. Some customers have decided to stop using their sites due to concerns raised by the court case. Ecotech is reportedly refunding their purchase price plus $15 shipping and handling. Let me read that again without the giggling. Ecotech is reportedly refunding the purchase price plus $15 shipping and handling. If you're interested in returning your site, we suggest you contact Ecotech.
I think George is rubbing off on us.
You mean Thomas?
I
see. You know, they're a good site. The only problems they had was in the extreme environments.
Right.
I think the average consumer who's just hunting with it or target shooting with it aren't really going to have a problem with it, but I guess it's put a scare in the industry. Do you own an Ecotech, Rick?
No. I'm an 8-point guy. So I'm strictly, I got 2 of those, and I'm pretty much happy with those. So, you had to make the choice when you wanted to get the Ecotech or the Aimpoints, and I just went the Aimpoint way, and I've been happy ever since.
Yeah, I would go for an Aimpoint, too.
Do you know if Aimpoint has been tested in extreme temperatures as well?
They did that whole thing where they, threw it from the helicopter, ran over with the tank type of stuff, and still worked. Yeah. But I don't know about the minus 40 type of weather testing. But you think that would just be something that they do, but...
Mm-hmm.
They ran over their site with a tank?
Oh, no, I'm just exaggerating. I'm carrying it through like an AK-47 or something. But they did throw it out of a helicopter and stuff, right? So they did do some, you know, some rigorous testing to it. But as far as the minus 40 or sub temperatures, not 100%. But you'd think that that's what be something that they'd definitely be interested in. But then again, at those temperatures, your batteries would freeze, right? So
yeah, that's true.
You know, they're not reliable. You back to, you know, iron sight. So that's just, you know, that's why you have your backups, I guess.
Yeah.
Well, it's EOTech's downfall, so I'm wondering if they've done it as well. Just, you know.
Well, even the FBI canceled it, and they just picked up Aimpoint. So Aimpoint is a good product.
Yeah. All right. George.
Your host.
So that brings us to what's new in the industry. Thomas, take it away.
Henning has announced that it's now making GrandPower IPSC production legal base pads for the GrandPower Excalibur, and I'm sure there's going to be other models to follow. With an extended length over the factory size, it makes it easier to reload and seat the magazine. Also, these are different from any other base pad by following the shape of the magazine, making them very smooth in your hand when you're reloading. And there's a signature Soco pattern at the bottom of the base for some traction when seating the mag. U.S. retail is $19.95. Canadian retail is around $26. Base pads for your magazines have a huge advantage for both the target and the competition shooter. It makes it easier to grasp and seat your mag. The added weight allows your mag to drop free faster and also protects the mags from impact damage, especially if you're shooting indoors, because concrete floors can be exceptionally hard on dropped mags, especially with unprotected bases. I had a couple of ACT mags for my STI Spartan, and after two or three matches inside, impacting the concrete floor, the magazines literally exploded when they hit the floor because the base pads just shattered. So if you can afford it, $26 isn't bad for a base pad to protect your magazines.
Yeah, that's good.
I went and checked out their website while I was waiting for you guys to come online there, and I was hoping they might have some other type of base pads, but I guess it's just pretty much just one type of base pads. And I've been on the hunt for some Glock 19 base pads, and they're few and far between to find. So,
yeah, I didn't see. I saw a lot of Tenfoglio stuff.
Yeah,
I didn't see any Glock stuff.
Did you have a chance to look at the close up of that as well?
Yes.
Did you see the circle? It actually ends in a G.
I never noticed that. Hang on.
Yeah, it does. I thought it was interesting.
Well, David will like that.
Yeah, GrandPower. Yeah, I contacted GrandPower to see what the Canadian pricing was on it. So they said it'd be around $26, maybe a little bit more as well on it. So.
Well, now that we're going to have a separate GrandPower distribution center, we should be able to get a lot more parts within the next few months. I know he's just starting up the website and the store and products just starting to make. He's got a lot of parts. He's got some magazines coming in for the centerfires and the 22s, and he should be having some pistols coming in within the next couple of months. So you'll be able to see a lot more GrandPower products in the Canadian market.
That's good.
How'd you like shooting my Excalibur, Rick?
Oh, it was awesome. I believe the Slamfire guys talked about one maybe last year, and ever since then I was like, oh, I got to get one of those, check it out. And they were hard to find, and magazines were hard to find, and holsters were hard to find, and I'm like, I'm just going to give up on it. So now, like a year later, you can probably get holsters and more magazines readily and aftermarket parts for it. So as you're seeing today with the base pads. But yeah, I mean, first time shooting yours, once I kind of got where the sight was there, and I was getting some good hits after I got that first shot off, so no, it was really sweet. The sweet piece of metal, man. That was awesome.
Those sight, that sight is tight. There's not much light bars in the back. When you're looking at, you really have to line it up to get that shot off. But the trigger was so nice from the factory. I haven't had to do anything to it.
Nice, right out of the box.
Nice light trigger.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's nice light trigger. I like it.
You want one?
Yep.
So Kevin, for Christmas. There you go.
I did message Kevin and told him I can get him a really good deal on one. He said he'd pay $9.50 was the most he was going to spend on Kevin.
I know. Yeah, he told me.
All right, well, let's move into our main topic with Rick from Fine Art Solutions Training.
Fire Art.
That's what I said.
Oh, I thought you heard fine. Fire Art, yeah.
I heard fine as well, but that's okay.
That's okay.
Fire art.
George
fire.
Doesn't read well.
Not tonight, anyways. What the listeners will not know was I made 3 attempts at story 1 and then made comic book. So, Rick, tell the listeners about who you are and Fire Art Solutions training and the history behind it.
My name is Rick Woods. Kind of have an online persona. His nickname is RJ with the Slamfire guys. I've been shooting about 5 years, and the last 2 years I've kind of exploded in sponging up all the relevant training I could find and, of course, afford, because it gets pretty pricey after a while. I started off doing usual target shooting at the range, and then slowly moved into IPSC and IDPA and 3-gun and trap, and now kind of more into the, you know, defensive shooting and slowly moving away from the competitive side of things. Just going to a competition and hanging out for 8 hours and just doing, you know, 5 or 6 draws and 100 rounds downrange just seemed like a real rough time or use of my time. So I just want to get kind of away from that. And I do like going out and being social and kind of hang out with friends and other firearms users, but I just like to go and focus on more of the, you know, defensive aspect of the shooting. So we've done a lot of training with Thunderbird Tactical with Daniel Shaw. We did a rifle course and pistol course with them a few times. Tactical Armor Response Academy with Tom Nelson. I think we've done 2 of his courses, all at Restigouche with the Slamfire boys.
And you've done Mag 42 also, haven't you?
Yeah, Mag 40 was on my bucket list, and I had a window of opportunity, so I drove down to Florida and kind of, you know, it was one of the best 4 or 5 days of my life. It was just words cannot describe, worth every penny, every hour on that highway driving down there, and it's absolutely a totally phenomenal course for anyone to, a lot of it's U.S. law-based, but you know, a lot of those laws are kind of copycat from Canadian laws, or Canadian laws are copycat from U.S. laws, so a lot of them are just worded differently or have different names, but a lot of them do actually kind of co-relate, so it's kind of interesting to see the similarities of the laws. So,
who was your instructor for the Mag 40?
Masada Yu.
Oh, excellent.
Yeah, and it was in his hometown, so he had all his hometown posse there with them, and they were just nothing like a family to take care of you for 4 days. They just treated you like family.
Awesome.
Lots of love, you know, and it's they called each other brother, and I you know, just kind of love that. Just, you know, it was, you know, like brother this and brother that, and you know, then the wives would come in and they, you know, feed you and give you cookies and stuff. I was like, you guys are awesome. I got to come down here way more often. So, but no, great, great opportunity for anyone that has the money and the time to go and do it. It's well worth every penny. And
no, it's not a cheap course. It's what, $800-$900 for a Mag 40?
Yeah, I took it when the dollar was a little bit better, but now with the dollar being just ridiculous, like going to the States,
$1,100 now, I guess.
Yeah.
Wait till oil prices go back up and our dollar goes back up.
Yeah, so it's, you know, trying to make a plan for this year for training, and it's going to be tough because that's a lot of money to spend on anything. So, Jessica is my girlfriend, and we went down and took a Lone Star Medics course in Ohio. Paul Carlson from Safety Solution Academy had Caleb Kazi up from Texas, and we did a 2-day Medics course, and I think it was about $400 each, but once again, well worth it. And you combine live fire into, you know, patching your buddy or patching your loved one up, and situational awareness. And we both walked out away from there, and we drove home for 4 hours. We just talked nonstop about how awesome it was and different scenarios. And that was just, you know, another piece of the pie, as they say, you know, for your training. It just, I'd recommend it to anyone. If anyone can get their hands on someone to teach them that stuff, like, it was absolutely phenomenal as well.
So we're not talking about first aid. We're talking about serious trauma training.
Serious trauma training, exactly. Yeah, so, you know, tourniquets, pressure dressings, hemostatic agents, chest seals, you know, all within the limits of, you know, just skirting the lines of practicing medicine. But most of the times, if you're using them on yourself or your loved ones, I guess you can kind of get away with it. But with Good Samaritan laws, and, you know, you got to know your limits, just like everything else when it comes to guns or medicine, right? So in my course, you know, I just kind of do I'm giving you an introduction into how things could go, You know, like I got taught to use a tourniquet, so I'll demonstrate to you how I use it on myself. And I encourage you to go out and find a trained professional to go and get some training so you can patch up yourself or your loved one and not just sit there and let them bleed out. So
I remember when I took that the first day court for work, for one of the first things the instructor said is that you are not a doctor.
Yeah.
You are not a doctor. If somebody refuses your treatment, you have to just step away, and they say, no, I don't want it. There's nothing you can do.
Yeah, you know, a lot of even guys, you know, go through the woods and they're hunting and they even puncture a branch through a leg, and, you know, it seems pretty far-fetched, but, you know, stuff does happen, right? So it's mean for you to carry, you know, something in your pocket or on your vest and just, or on the side of your rifle, some guys do, and just, you know, wrap around your leg. It could save your life or your buddy's life, you know, so.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's a couple strange stories, you know, like I have a little IFAC, you know, it's the cool guy thing to wear. You put it on your battle belt and you wear it around the range, and, you know, and few guys kind of made fun of it, and I'm like, what are you doing making fun of it, man? Like, this could save your life or it could save my life. And they're like, oh, well, it's just kind of, you know, it's a little bit too extreme for him to wrap his head around why, you know, you got a tourniquet. And I'm like, well, dude, like, it's within seconds. If someone shoots me in the leg, I'm putting it on. So
I know the attitude you're talking about, because I've run up against it too. Just something as simple as being able to holster your sidearm. It's like, well, why do you need to do that? Well, why would I want to leave it lying on a bench if I have to, you know, walk away to my car for a minute or something and leave it unattended?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
You know, but people have that mentality that, oh, if you're holstering it, you're, you know, you think you're Rambo or something, and it's like, no, it's not that. It's just...
Well, it's like this paracord brace that I wear. I've had people make comments to me, but, you know, I could use it as a tourniquet. If I need an emergency piece of rope, it's just snip, snip, and I've got something that I could use as a tool that could save somebody's life or could save my life. So it may look silly, but I wear it.
Yeah. We had a level 2 match here in London during the summer, and someone had devised this kind of crazy heart-shaped kind of stage where you kind of started at the bottom of the heart and ran to the front, and then you hit a backtrack around to the other side of the heart. And, well, the guy just tripped over his feet as he was turning around, and you know, that was the first time I've ever had like a loaded firearm pointed at me, and the guy's face is in the dirt, the gun's in the dirt, pointed right at me, and you know, once again, finger discipline, it was on the side of the frame, and I was like, I need to go change my shorts. I could have been just something like
no
that.
Kidding.
Yeah. Everyone's playing a nice, honest game, and you're just trying to be an RO, and next you know, you got a loaded firearm pointed at you, and buddy's in the dirt, and I was like, holy, and it could have turned out a lot worse, so.
It's scary, I've had it happen.
Yeah.
So
what's the training environment like in Canada? Are you getting a lot of people wanting to take courses?
How about we ask what courses he has available or he has planned for 2016?
Yeah.
Okay. 2016, we have a date for, I think it's the second Sunday in January, doing a fundamentals and manipulation course. That's pretty much the most popular one that I've done. And I've had, you know, like brand new shooters to people have been shooting for 30 some odd years. You know, they're like, you know what, I own a gun or a handgun and I just don't really, you know, not comfortable with it. And I got one mag. I said, just bring it out. You got a holster. That's fine. You don't have a holster. That's fine. We'll make it work. We'll get you comfortable with it. And we had one guy, he said, you know, over 30 years of being at this club, I've never seen anything like this. And it was awesome. He's like, I'll tell everyone about it. I'll come back, do it again. And he was just dumbfounded that, you know, out of all of his years of shooting, that they've never seen a course that was covering the stuff that I was covering. And it was all, you know, crucial information that someone should have told him in all of his years. So I'm like, I was very honored to have that high praise from him. And I just put up on my Facebook page, you know, a couple of other comments that people left. And, you know, I'm very honored that people have good feedback, and I'm well open to, you know, negative feedback because I want to learn. You know, I'm a student number one, and if I'm not learning, then you're not learning. So, you know, please give me feedback, what you want to see, what you don't want to see. If something's a waste of your time, please tell me, and I'll consider, you know, dropping it from the next course, or, you know, we can talk it out and find a better solution for, you know, what would work better. So,
now, the first question that comes to my mind, can I run your handgun fundamentals with my cowboy rig?
I'm sure you could.
I'm sure you could. Yeah, yeah. I don't see why not, man. Like, if that's the gun that you have, and that's what you want, to be, that unconscious consciousness of using that that firearm, then bring it, run it. You know, like, I don't do like the tac reloads and the speed reloads and stuff. I just don't find that, critical for most shooters. But if you're comfortable just doing a standard reload, firing your gun, unloading it, firing it again, that's all I really care about. And doing it safely is primary. And just so you get your shot placement, and, it's just all tips and tricks on that I've learned over the years and just want to pass them off to you guys. And like Thomas, I could take your Excalibur, and I've never shot it before, and, after getting the one shot to see where it was sighted in that, and I could adjust my fire and kind of hit the rifleman's challenge targets that were hitting at there. And, people always blame the gun, and I'm not used to the gun. And but you should be able to just pick up anyone's gun as long as it's operationally, sighted in properly and get your hits on target. And as long as your fundamentals are all the same, it shouldn't be no matter what firearm you're using, it's your hits go where you plan them to go.
I find that only works if it's like the first couple of shots. Once you get a couple of shots on target, you know where it's pointing, then you no longer have an excuse.
Exactly.
Now, you talked about the handgun fundamentals. Do you have any other courses that you currently offer, or you have anything in the works that you're working on?
I met a gentleman, Chris. He took one of my courses. I did a private lesson with him, and he had a hand-to-hand kind of defensive tactics background, a lot of karate and jiu-jitsu. And so we were talking. He's like, "Hey, man, there's this guy, Randy King. He's coming in from Edmonton, running a course on self-defense, and his company's called KPC Self-Defense out of Edmonton. I think there's one in Halifax as well." And he's like, "Would you mind coming out and, do some shooting with them?" And I'm like, "Yeah, okay, sure, dude, whatever." And so we became kind of Facebook friends. Where I'm like, "Dude, what kind of stuff do you want to do to the range?" He's like, "Dude, I've had a gun for, 4 or 5 years, and I'm not very good at it." And I'm like, "All right, dude, well, come on out. We'll set some stuff out." And I've been kind of working on this urban pistol course, which kind of incorporates like the hand-to-hand combat or the force-on-force training, and kind of like fighting your way out with your hands from a bad situation, and then getting to your gun, in an ensconced position like your bedroom, and waiting for your friends, the police to show up and kind of take care of the problem. So we brought out like the punching bag and the bob dummy and, the punching pads, and engaging each other with those, and worked up, some good heart rate, and then engaged the targets from, the supine position, or, kneeling, or, crouching. So we had a blast, and it was supposed to be only like 2 hours, but 6 hours later, we're still out there doing it, and we're just like, couldn't get enough of it. I'm like, so he was a big help for kind of getting that urban pistol course up and running. So the first one will be in February, and first we'll probably be in the indoor range at Crumlin, but once we can go outside, it's going to open up the whole environment for us, and I can't wait to start doing it outside.
Are you going to be doing rifle training as well?
Yes, we're supposed to have done a carbine course in October, and I just got busy with the baby planning and coming, and so I was like, I can't do it. So that was my excuse, and people were like, "I'm all ready to go. We got slings, I got mag pouches," and I'm like, "Sorry, I just can't get her going." So we're kind of postponing that till probably the spring now, and we'll get that going. It's going to be all probably AR based, and because that's the most of my knowledge is AR based, and if guys come out with other firearms, I don't think I could give it due respect to help them achieve what they want to conquer with it. So
I can't bring out my lever action?
No, dude, you can come, but I don't think I'd be able to help you other than just doing the basic fundamentals, and I don't know what kind of malfunctions you get with your lever action.
Just don't bring the SKS, George.
My lever action is smooth as butter. It does not malfunction. Actually, that's not true. The only malfunction it does is when I don't crimp my loads properly and the bullet gets sucked into the brass.
Oh, jeez.
But I blame that on the reloader, not the gun. I've never had a malfunction with that gun.
Oh, cool. Is that the one that you brought out there when I met you guys at the range there last week or last month? Your 45 long bolt?
Yep.
Right on. So
I might take your courses, but I'm going to come out full cowboy.
Do it, man. Yeah.
I will.
Well, if I come out, George, you can use my AR, since yours probably won't be built for another couple of years.
No.
So, how are the courses, or how is the course different than other courses like Black Badge and that sort of thing? Like, what are people going to get out of your courses that they're not going to get out of other training courses?
Black Badge like teaches you how to play the game or a game, mm-hmm. And I, you know, right up with people, I'm like, I'm not teaching you how to play a game. I'm just teaching you how to, you know, get comfortable with your firearm. And if you want to go and take Black Badge, you're going to PPC or IDPA, you know, go for it. On my initial Black Badge course, I think there's maybe 10 or 12 of us there. And there's a guy with the Glock. He just got it. He just started shooting it. And he was getting the Glock bite. And I said to the other students, I'm like, does the instructor not want to say to the guy, hey, dude, you're bleeding. Clearly you're doing something wrong. And so maybe you should hold your hands differently. But instead, they gave him a Band-Aid. And then the Band-Aid got ripped off, you know, when he started shooting again. And I was just like, oh, for the love of God, I got to say something. And I was a self-taught shooter back then. And, you know, it's not my place to go and, you know, help another student out. But the guy was bleeding. Like, it's not, wasn't getting any better. And I was just like, Black Badge teaches you how to play the game. And there's not enough time allotted, really, to break down the fundamentals and getting everything else kind of fine-tuned. And, like, that's another whole day on itself. So.
Right.
If that's, but the system, you know, of the Black Badge course, you know, depends on the instructor. And I volunteered at a bunch of courses, and you know, I try to do my due diligence to pull people aside and help them out. But you know, my passion is really more of the, you know, protect myself and my family and my friends, and you know, pass down the information to other people. And I know. Defensive shooting is kind of taboo in Canada, and using that terminology is a little bit provocative probably for people, but you know, Canada is kind of like the ever-changing environment now lately, because it's you never know what's going to happen in the news. Like, there's a shooting I think in Toronto last night. There was a baby shower and four people got shot. You know, like, what's going on at a baby shower? People are getting shot. So,
well, actually, that kind of segues into my next question, and that's, what's the training environment like in Canada? Like, I know I listen to a lot of American pro gun podcasts, and they're very self-defense focused, very concealed carry. They have that built into their culture, where up here in Canada, we don't quite have that self-defense with a firearm built into our culture. So what kind of, you know, hurdles or what... some struggles that you've encountered in the kind of getting your training up and off the ground, like as far as receptive and, you know, just the environment and the mentality up here in Canada?
Yeah, as you said, like the defined trainers, it's few and far between. Like, you hear firearms trainers and they'll teach you your, you know, your PAL and your RPAL. Black Badge, as we just discussed, it's not really a fundamentals course.
It's more of a safety course.
To play the game safely. You know, there's a few other trainers in Canada, some with like law enforcement and military backgrounds. And, you know, I'm just Joe civilian guy that has the interest in just being safe and, you know, as I said, protecting my friends and family. And my passion is just kind of, you know, making people better. And it's not to be a money-making opportunity. If I can cover the cost of like the targets and the stickers and, you know, the blue guns, and, you know, I usually have like extra holsters because, you know, people's holsters break or they don't work, or mag pouches. And so everything just goes back into supplies, and it's not really, you know, it's not a get rich quick scheme by any means. And nor do I want to be the cool guy, you know, the new Chris Costa. That's not my ambition either. So, just want to make people better. And all my training is pretty much done from guys in the States. You know, we just don't have anything up here in Canada. And I'm like, there's an open niche for it. And I don't want to be the spearhead guy to, you know, to start it up. But I just want people to get better. And I don't know where else to send them aside from saying, you got to go to the States. These guys are awesome. Learn from these guys, because they'll teach you some stuff that will totally, like, blow your mind.
Can I ask you a question?
Yes.
Can I ask about exactly that? Down in the United States, they're able to open carry or conceal carry. Up here in Canada, we're not able to carry. So when you're talking about protecting ourselves or our loved ones, how, and you're talking about training for it and that as well, how can we train for it here in Canada?
I do a lot of the, you know, real situational-based training, where majority of our situations would probably happen at home. So I'll run like a scenario, like you're obviously at home, it's either in the middle of the night or during the day, and your, you know, 12-year-old daughter, she enters the knock at the door, she looks at the people, and she sees like four guys there with guns, and, you know, and it creates a discussion like, what would you do? Maybe they start kicking at the door, maybe they shoot through the door and your 12-year-old daughter gets shot. Then what happens? You know, do you go out and, you know, stand there at the door, or do you go and ensconce yourself in the bedroom and call 911 and wait for the police to show up? And, okay. And then in the meantime, like your daughter's been shot, like what are you going to do about it? And so it kind of comforts the, you know, all the what ifs in our type of situation. And you guys had Ian Thompson on the show, was it a few weeks ago or last month?
Yeah, we had him on last month.
Yeah,
and there's kind of an Ian Thompson drill in there, you know, like the what ifs, this is what's going on, similar to his situation, you know, like what would you do? And it's always interesting to see, you know, in the discussions that I've had with people during just a fundamentals course about, you know, safety in your home and defensive pistol, what some of the answers that people would come up to. You're like, oh, I shoot the guy and then I administer first aid on him. I'm like, what?
No. Then he's going to sue you if you survive.
I was like, okay, well, yeah, we got to talk about that. So, you know, but, you know, people just have that, you know, well, you steal my TV, I'm going to shoot him.
Yeah.
Like, well, it's your TV and, you know, you can get a new TV. You have insurance and, you know, so.
Do you cover the legal side of things at all or no?
I do. After I came back from MAG 40, I went and I started researching all the comparative laws that we have here in Canada. And there's, like I said, a lot of similarities. And Masada Yuba teaches you all the little tips and tricks to keep yourself out of jail for the most part. But once again, it's if you got an overeager police officer that's not really sure what's going on, he'll put the hooks on you and they'll take you in. And you can sort it out from there. But a lot of the discussion is, you know, you really have to think about the consequences before you unbox your firearm. What's going to happen if you're actually taking that position in that situation? You got to really think about it before you get to that position in life.
You have to think of the consequences for your options.
I've always kind of had the mentality that somebody breaks into my. Well, I live in an apartment, so you know, the second they're coming in the door, they're going to be engaged because I'm not far from the door. But if I'm at Wanda's place. And we're on one story and the burglars are on another story, I may have the right to go down and engage them, but do I want to fight out and defend myself and prove my right and that I was well within my rights in the court of law, or do I want to stay upstairs, barricade, defend my position, and let them do whatever they want and leave?
Yeah, like, if you're going out and hunting for the bad guy, you know, that's now changing, like, the rules of engagement, right? But if you're, like, in your bedroom, doors closed, hiding behind your bed, on the phone with the police, you know, waiting for them to show up. Like, that's a whole other situation. You know, that's doing every means you could possibly do to, you know, protect yourself. But going out and hunting for the bad guy, that's not going to help you.
No.
I've listened to some podcasts where that's advocated, and, you know, they talk about house clearing, practicing and stuff like that. And I'm like, man, like, you are opening yourself up for a world of trouble. I get it. It's your home. They have no right to be in there. But at the end of the day, you're the one that's going to be going to court and having to defend all this stuff.
Yep.
You know what? I'd rather barricade myself on a floor where my loved ones are and mark my line in the sand. And as long as they don't cross that line, I'll let the police clear the house. And the police can do with that. Like, that's what they're trained for.
Exactly. You know, and that gives you everything in your means to avoid getting into a confrontation. And waiting for the police to show up. And if they don't get here there in time, well, then you're up to, you know, the act of necessity, as it's called. And you can look that up, and you have to and do whatever you got to do to protect yourself. So, but hopefully it never comes to that. But, you know, one of the drills that we do is called the lockbox drill. And it's, you know, you run to the box, you unlock the box, you charge your gun, and you engage the target. And it just gets you into that concept of, you know, if you got a combo lock, if you got a key, if you got, you know, a fingerprint lock, you know, can you do it under stress? You know, like, is it, you know, it's better to do it under stress at the range than at home when you actually need to do it, you know, in low light situations, you know, you're going to hold a flashlight to get the three digits in there. So, and it's a lot of different, you know, discussion, and Mag 40 is a lot of talking, a lot of listening, not a lot of shooting, but it's the discussion, and you learn from other people's mistakes, and it's quite the eye-opening experience. So I just don't want to see, you know, more Ian Thompsons in the world, that's for sure. And especially after his bill that he got off, but that bill is going to be, it's, how do you pay that off? Like, that's ridiculous.
I think it's, in the end, it was almost over $65,000. A lot of it was covered from donations, and I know Mr. Berlew actually did some of it pro bono.
But oh, sweet.
Then you look at the actual physical and mental cost to Ian's life.
Yep. Yeah. Masad did an interview with a guy who was involved in, he shot his neighbor, similar to the Ian Thompson thing. His neighbor was picking on him, and he ended up shooting him, and they arrested the guy. And I think he was in jail for about 6 months. It's on, I think Mass has his podcast there out of the States. I can't remember what it said. Maybe we can put it in the show notes. But the guy who talks for an hour saying how it totally, like, you know, screwed up his life and his family's life. He can't get a job. Like, it's great that he's still alive, but he's just completely devastated, and it'll never be the same. It, almost like it would have been better if he just died. That's how the other side of the coin. So
I think a lot of it stems, or the difference between our two cultures, that in the States, the police officer has the ability to make a judgment call whether it's self-defense or not on the spot. Like, he can say, well, no, it's self-defense, but here it goes to the prosecutors, and the prosecutors tend to be over zealous up here. And even if it's a clear-cut case of self-defense, 90% of the time they still charge the victim, and they let the courts figure it out. So I think it would be a good idea for anybody to take your course, just to help them, give them some guidelines when defending themselves.
Yeah, it just gets the conversation going, and it's, but a lot of the conversations that's been had in the past, you know, in the clubhouse or, you know, over beer somewhere, it's bad advice being passed down from generation to generation, and it's just like,
it's true.
You guys can't be doing that anymore. Like, it's the 21st century, and it's a very fluid society we live in, and we can't do that. So, and yeah, thanks. It's the Pro Arms podcast. That's what it was. Awesome. Thanks for whoever just added that in the show notes.
No problem.
I love that. Great.
There's a reason we have Kelly. Right.
Thanks, Kelly.
So what evolution have you been through in your firearms journey? You're kind of touching on how you're at that black badge and you're self-taught, and you've kind of gone through a bit of the courses you've taken. But like, where did you start? Like, how long ago, when did you first get into guns, and kind of take us through how you got to where you are now?
It was 5 years ago, and I'm very lucky that Jessica she has her RPAL as well. And when I first met her, she was kind of hesitant about sharing that piece of the information with them. Like, oh, geez, that's awesome. You know, you're a shooter. I'm a shooter. That's fantastic. So it's been love ever since. And so we kind of been on this journey almost together. You know, she's taken the Tommy course and the Dan and Shaw course, and
perfect companion.
Yeah. Probably just like Kevin and you, Kelly. And it's great to have a partner that's totally into it. And,
well, he begged a different battle.
Oh, really?
No, good.
Well, Jessa specifically told us that when it comes to the charity shoot, she's shooting and you're babysitting. So
that was totally the deal.
Yeah,
she
yeah.
got me an awesome baby boy, and I have no problem with that whatsoever. You know, we did the gun thing, and we trained, and, you know, we got our skills up to a level that, you know, we've kind of found that was satisfactory with us. And then we proceeded to doing the medical stuff on the side, and that was just a totally, you know, empowering thing to go into. And we did drags and carries, and Jess was, she's about maybe 110 pounds, and she was carrying the 200-pound Rescue Randy dummy around by herself. And she's like, I can't do this. And then Caleb says, you know, do it like this or use this way. And there she was dragging this dummy around. And I'm like, that's awesome. Like, that could be me one day, or that could be somebody else. And
didn't you carry Daniel Shaw for 100 meters?
I did. when I met Daniel the first time, the short version of the story is I was just, you know, guy with a gun, you know, taking the course and, you know, just trying to get my skills up. And I couldn't carry Daniel the first time. We did a whole bunch of cardio and I was running my ass off back and forth. And by the time I got to pick him up, I'm like, my legs are spaghetti. I have nothing left in reserves and I couldn't carry him. So I'm like, next year I'm coming back and I'm going to conquer this. And I think I ended up losing like 30 pounds, got total in shape. And you know, as I said, I'm going to carry you. And he's like, you're good. You can put me down. It's like, no, dude, I'm doing taking you all the way back. And he's like, all right.
He's not a small guy.
No, he's not.
You know, and I just had to prove it to myself and the other people that were there as well from the previous year and that year. So, and that was, that was a goal that I had set for myself, and I'm glad I could conquer that. And you just got to keep making goals and goals that you can achieve. And, you know, that was my motivation. And I just didn't want to be the guy having the cardiac arrest on the gun range because, you know, I can't run. But, you know, it's good to be in shape. And I got into Krav Maga and I was like, you know, you're not always going to have a gun. And so what are we going to do? And Jess was taking it with me. And then we found out she was pregnant like 3 weeks into the course and she got kicked out. And,
oh, that's too bad.
But I've been doing it ever since and twice a week. And it's just another empowering experience. So I kind of want to, you know, merge everything together, you know, the medical, you know, the kind of the Krav Maga basics and the shooting and the legal stuff, and throw it all into one package and just give it to people for like, you know, like 30, 40 bucks, you know, to come out and learn a bunch of stuff, tell people about it, get them to come back and just, you know, keep on paying it forward. And if I can, you know, inspire someone to like drop 10 pounds or, you know, get their family out and talking about, you know, a plan of home invasions, what happens if, you know, what are we going to do? And, you know, or get even first aid training or first responder training, you know, like if you can take care of somebody, then that would be awesome, you know. And, but the chances of you pulling out your gun and shooting a bad guy, it, you know, it's not going to happen. You know, like it's very, very rarely that I think you're going to go down that path. You know, and you see the links on Gun Nuts about people going on about, oh yeah, I'd get my ATC, and hey, I'd get my ATC as well. But we really need to understand, you know, the full ramifications of getting that permit and the path that you go down once you have it. So,
and very few people have it.
And very few people have it, right? So,
we're going to be using the medical though. For sure.
Cool.
You know, I'm just saying, like, you're more likely, and you're going to be using medical, even just coming up onto a car accident or somebody falling downstairs at work or, you know,
finding someone having a heart attack is more likely, right? So,
yeah.
Can you do CPR? You know, you know, it's cool to have all the cool guy stuff, but, you know, knowledge of, you know, saving someone's life, you know, with just, you know, doing CPR or putting a bandage over a wound or just putting your hand over a wound is just like, you know, just, you know, just some basic skills that, you know, we all should kind of do just to help each other out, or just, you know, your loved ones and, you know, your friends and neighbors.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. All right. So what do you think being a firearm owner is like in today's fluid world of changing events?
Well, you know, we've had a lot of, you know, major things happen, like, you know, the Moncton shooting, and I work with people that were in Moncton, and they're like, yeah, we're sitting in our living rooms with baseball bats. We didn't know if buddy was coming through the door or, you know, walking down the street, and you're just, you know, people just kind of living in constant fear. And I don't want to have, like, fear-based agenda where, you know, I want you to be scared to come take my course. I want you to say to yourself, I just want to know more information and be better prepared and go and get the training and find information out that's going to help me out for whatever events that might happen. So if you choose to be a firearm owner and keep your firearm locked up, great. You know, but think about, you know, the ever-changing environment where, you know, we have, you know, whether it be mass shootings or, you know, crazy people walking down the streets killing RCMP officers, the mental instability of, you know, people nowadays, and there's a lot of self-centeredness out there, and you gotta keep watching out for your friends and family. It's kind of the world that we're living in nowadays. So
I think people really should be prepared for what might happen. It's not a bad idea to have a firearm that's easily accessible but not accessible to other people, just in case you do need it.
Oh yeah, most definitely. And you know, Gunfighter Cast had a conversation about who would you die for, and this guy Scott Ballard posed that question about, you know, like, if, and I say that in the class, you know, like, who would you guys die for? You know, like, you know, would you guys die for Kelly, or would you die for Kelly's neighbor down the street, or, you know, the 7-Eleven slushy boy? You know, like, what if you die for the slushy boy, who's taking care of your family? You know, like, what good are you for, you know, protecting your family now from anything else that might happen? So when people want to be, you know, a hero, that's great, but, you know, but at what cost? And I hate to see, you know, a fatherless child or a motherless child, because, you know, it's great that you went and gave your life for somebody else, but, you know, you got to really think of the full ramifications of it. And that San Bernardino shooting, the one coworker, he kind of sheltered or shielded the one girl from being shot, and he ended up dying. I think it was Shannon Johnson, you know, and he was a young guy, and he put his life between that and the bullet and protected the girl, and she's alive. And unfortunately, you know, he didn't make it, but it's great that we have heroes like that in the world, but you got to really think of the consequences and who you're going to leave behind and who you're willing to die for. So
it's a serious question.
It is, and it's just good to think about it now than, you know, when you're in, you know, downtown Toronto at the Eaton Center and on Boxing Day and there's gunfire going off, you know, like
retreat.
You retreat and go and hide. You know, you think of your options, right? So
yeah, and I think far too often, especially when you get on some of these forums, you get these armchair cowboys and, you know, probably living in mom's basement going, oh yeah, I would do this, I'd do this, I'd do this, I'd do this. Yeah, well, when the real bullets start flying, like, I know me personally, I would be fight or flight, and I'd be grabbing my kids and I'd be flighting.
Yeah.
My kids are my top priority. You know, as much as I'd love to say I would do all the tactical mole ninja stuff and tuck and roll and, you know, do all the Bruce Lee stuff, my kids, that's where my priority is making sure they're safe. If I'm with Wanda, making sure she's safe. You know, if I'm there by myself, then, you know, making sure that I'm safe and anyone that's near me, you know, I'd obviously help them, but, you know, I know my limitations, and I don't have the training or the ability to engage an active
you
shooter,
really,
but I have the ability to help others get to safety, and that's what I
think the big problem these days in our society is people have no concept of their own personal safety. I see that working in the transit system. You know, people don't know what it's like to even worry about themselves. They do such stupid things, so you really have to evaluate a situation before you get involved in it. No matter what it is, if somebody needs emergency first aid, well, what's the condition of the situation? Why they need the first aid? Are you going to put yourself in danger applying first aid, or is it better to get out of there and contact 911? You really have to, and you have to make the decision quickly.
I think people actually, depends on the situation, depends on the amount of training they've had. They'll make you're right, there are some people who make some pretty stupid decisions, but if, you know, I know with me, if I have the training and if I, and it depends on the situation, it depends on what I'm going to be doing. So, yeah.
You know, and people show up for the course and they, you know, you show up for a fundamentals course and I kind of blindside you by, you know, a couple of thought-provoking questions, which it's kind of good to catch people off guard with that. And as you said, Thomas, like, you just, you know, I like to get people thinking about the type of violence and the type of people that are in this world nowadays, and you just never know what you're going to run into. So, like here in London, we've had you know, a bunch of shootings and stabbings this year, and we're, you know, London was supposed to be, you know, nice little quiet, you know, little city, and in June we had Jeremy Cook, who lost his cell phone in a taxi cab. I don't know if you guys heard the story.
Yeah.
And he went and tracked down his cell phone and ended up getting shot.
Yeah, got killed.
and killed. And that was 2 miles from where Justin and I were living at the time. And Jeremy was one of my, he was in my Krav Maga course. So it kind of hit really close to home with us. And I was just like,
oh, I remember you talking about that.
Yeah. And just, it totally like floored us for how, kind of took the tone out of our class quite a bit. So, it's just, yeah, the violence that's out there now, it's just, it's a little bit disturbing. So I like to say to people, like, think about the violence that you've seen or that you had in your lifetime, and, you know, and just kind of remember that it's out there, and don't live in the bubble thinking that the world's a happy place. And
well, people do live in a bubble. That's the problem. Yeah. They walk around with their headset on, or they're looking at their phones, and they're not really even aware of their immediate environments.
Yeah, you know, I tell them the Jerry Me Cook story, and I had a tenant who I ended up evicting. His name was Shane Wood. And I went over there to collect rent, and he threatened me numerous times. And I'm like, yeah, okay, dude, whatever. And a couple years later, he had stabbed his uncle to death. Multiple facial fractures, broken tooth, brain injury, sharp force wounds to his neck and upper body. And then he burned him alive and for what's left of him in his home. And that, so he got charged just last month with first degree murder, or finally convicted of first degree murder. And I was like, man, that could have been me. You know, I just pissed this guy off, you know, too much. And next, you know, he's coming over to my home and taking me out. And I would have been completely unprepared for any type of situation that would totally would have happened. It would have been unfathomable in my mind that he would have been able to come and do that. But 2 years later, he just reached that breaking point and he snapped. So, yeah, you just never know where it's going to come from.
All right. Now, we got a couple questions here from listeners I'd like to throw your way. First one comes from Crystal Power. What's your favorite way to help someone with a flinching problem?
Hit him with a stick.
Stop flinching. Stop flinching.
Oh. What was it that Jewel said? Anticipating the anticipation?
I think that's what it was. Yeah.
Oh, that's right.
No, it's you get like kind of the, you know, the package deal with all the other kind of fundamentals coming in, but like the crash course would be, you know, if you have a nice firm grip, if you're doing like the thumbs forward grip hold, and, you know, Mass calls it the crush grip, where you're kind of squeezing like equal power on both sides and just squeezing the all you can out of that firearm. And depending on, everyone has different philosophies where you put the trigger, if you put it on, you know, the right of your pad, the center of your pad, the left of your pad. And, you know, Tom Nelson talked to us about the power crease, and just set that trigger in the power crease and just do a lot of dry fire and just do it, you know, maybe 10 minutes, you know, 2-3 times a week. I say to people, just sit on your couch with your firearm, get familiar with it, put magazine in, magazine out, and dry fire during commercials, you know, point at the bad actors, and then when you're ready
to do that.
Yeah. Especially during the show when you're getting the clicks going on, but you know, and then take it to the range and spend the money on the ammo and just take your time. And the new technique that we learned from Daniel Shaw this fall was, you know, he counts off, you know, 1 pound, 2 pound, 3 pound, bang, and you start over again, 1 pound, 2 pound, 3 pound, bang, and it gives your mind something else to think about when you're pulling that trigger back, and you're not just thinking, oh, I got to pull this trigger back, and I got to hold my hands like this, and I got to look at the front sight, and I got to put it on target, and all these other things, and it's going to make a loud noise, and just go 1 pound, 2 pound, 3 pound, and just focus on that.
That's a good suggestion.
Yeah, and it was...
Yeah, I've...
Go ahead,
York. Sorry, go ahead, Rick. I was just going to say, if something I've done, and I wouldn't say I have a flinching problem, but I'm not immune to flinching. And if I find that I've flinched, the next two rounds, I'll make sure that it's at least aiming in the direction of the target, and then I'll just kind of, not close my eyes, but just kind of focus on just pulling the trigger. And not so much the target or the sights, and I'll just focus on the trigger, keep pulling until it breaks, and then do that a couple times, and then you're focused on that trigger more than the bang, so to speak. And it's kind of what you were saying: 1 pound, 2 pound, 3 pound, bang.
Yeah, you gotta trick the mind, right? And some people say, you know, you double up in your ear protection, so the, you know, when the shot goes off, you're not like, oh, I'm waiting for that big bang to go off. Like, you know, it's going to go off, and especially when people have, you know, like a dummy round in there and they make that bad flinch, you're like, I was like really super bad. You could see like the muzzle dip down, and just like, and they're like, oh, that was embarrassing. I'm like, well, yeah, it was pretty embarrassing, but don't do it again next time. So it's, yeah. But
I'll,
yeah,
double,
you know,
I'll double up my ear protection indoors because it's so loud that the shots actually startle you sometimes. You're not expecting it. You'll,
yeah.
And you'll throw your shots.
But, you know, but try it outside and see if, you know, the, if it's the sound that's an issue, but, you just got to find other ways to trick your mind and try that 1 pound, 2 pound thing. And that, that seemed to be a kind of a good new way to kind of get people to focus on something other than, you know, getting that shot right exactly where they want it on target.
I think maybe they're using too much gun.
Too much gun in which way?
Well, I've seen people where they'll go out and they'll buy a 40 and or they'll buy a 45 and they develop a flinch because it's just too much for them. They shoot the 9.5, but with the bigger calibers, they're always anticipating it. Maybe they get something that's just a little too much for them to handle.
Yeah, I guess there's kind of like a brain. Obviously, you know, like I was watching a guy shoot a, you know, the Desert Eagle there. We had a pumpkin shoot and I was just like, okay, you know, obviously there's going to be some, you know, interpretations with that, but yeah, obviously start with something reasonable. If you're a new shooter, you know, start with a 22 and then build up to a 9. Nowadays, for it's rare for a lot of people to go up to a 40 or 45 if they're not, you know, using it for IPSC, I guess. Or, but majority 9mm, it's pretty much the way to go. It seems to be nowadays. It's most popular round in North America, especially after the FBI gave it their seal of approval for the new defense round.
Well, as long as they also have their fundamentals down, so if they, you know, they're holding the gun correctly in that as well. So
You know, I just find that a lot of it, all those fundamentals kind of go out the window when, you know, the stress level increases and
true.
You know, so it's all it's kind of tough to get people to remember the fundamentals when the stress level's rising. But not like they're going to be going 1 pound, 2 pound, 3 pound with the bad guys coming through their bedroom door. But
yeah,
still, maybe they kind of made that muscle memory and that finger kind of remembers, you know, just nice, smooth, you know, press back and get that round off. And hopefully the follow-up round will do the exact same.
Yeah.
Right. All right. And Mr. Bolivar is going to close out the interview with his question. Schedule of courses, fees, and why the heck hasn't he already told me all this information already?
Well, I wanted Brian to listen to the show, so I said, Brian, you got to listen to the show, man. He's like, oh, just tell me I'm like listening to the show.
So. Hi, Brian.
Hi, Brian.
Hi, Brian.
Yeah, Brian was my partner at the last Daniel Shaw course, and we were Team Ontario, and we made a really good team. But Brian's got to work on his cardio. He's having a massive coronary there on the range, so we can't be having that anymore. But I think he said he was going to try and get into shape for the next round if there was another Daniel Shaw course or not. But hopefully,
are you
does
a throw down for him?
You'll
have to carry Chris. Daniel for the 100 meters there.
Yeah, we'll get Brian to carry me. How's that sound?
Okay.
But yeah, I'm trying to run a course every month, and the fundamentals course is like $20. And I say to people, like, this is like a $200 course in the States, and it's just to cover costs and targets and patches, and it's not to make any money. Half of it goes back to the club, and the other half is left just for me to do whatever, just to cover my expenses.
That is and cheap, $20.
As I said, yeah. Just want to, you know, pay the information forward, and it's not about making money. It's I just have the passion, and I just want to, you know, elevate people from where they are and get rid of those bad training scars that they developed from being self-taught or having other people give them bad information on how to shoot better. So, and if they get better, and so far I've seen everyone's gotten better, and they got the shotgun pattern down to a nice small little hole, which is kind of nice, and that's what I like to see.
So what days do you normally do it?
You had mentioned a website that you're working on. Will you have like a calendar on that website so people can go there and see when the next courses are coming up?
Yeah, there'll be a calendar on there. It won't be like an e-commerce thing. You know, if you want to come to the course, you just send me an email. We'll just kind of do it that way. It's usually right on a Saturday, Sunday, depending on range availability. And if I can start, you know, journeying outside of London and going to different ranges to do it, I'll do that as well. But right now I want to get everything kind of fine tuned here in London before I start venturing out to different ranges. So,
use us as the guinea pig.
Yeah, exactly. That, you know,
we're supposed to stay close to home right now, too.
And you know what? And I'm okay with that because Crumlin's about a 25 minute drive up the road for me, and $20, even my cheap butt can afford that.
Yeah, and it's a great facility, and you know.
Yeah, they've done a ton of work on that place, a ton of work.
So and
Road trip.
Yeah, I'm thinking I'm going to have to come down and see you.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, guys, like when the weather gets better, once we get outside, doing anything inside is really limiting. It really takes the fun out of it. But once we get outside, it's going to be a great year. And I'm just going to do the release of the website in January, and you know, see where it goes from there. I'm not going to be like an Instagram guy. There's a Facebook page, Fire Art Solutions Training. You can contact me there if you guys have any questions or comments. And other than that, there will never be a YouTube video. I'm not a YouTube guy. you know, so if you want to see stuff or do stuff, come to the range. It's $20. It's, you know, I mean, you'll probably spend more money in gas coming to the course than you will actually, you know, spending money on the course. So,
yeah. Well, you know what? What we'll do is when you're ready to release the website or go live with the website, we'll have you back on the show. And maybe if you have some actual hard dates, we can promote that too.
Oh, that'd be awesome. Yeah. You know what? Scott Patience from Bullseye London, he's been a big component with trying to get me to do this. And he's, I was on the fence, And then when Jeremy Cook got killed, I was just like, all right, enough's enough. You know, we got to go and start talking to people and starting the discussions. And, you know, like, don't go looking for your cell phone at 5 o'clock in the morning. You know, like, call the police. You know, they're your friends. They're there to do the job. And you have other options. And we just need to get some good discussions going with people. And it's great that you feel empowered because you're a firearms owner. But there's a lot of evil people out there, and they'll just do whatever they want to do to get through their night. So,
yeah,
you know, it would kill me to know any more friends of mine that would put themselves in that situation, and they perish because of it. So, yeah.
Yeah, I like Scott. He's a good guy. He's always done good by me.
No, and we got to help each other out. You know, it's really tough being a firearms owner. The laws are constantly, you know, being changed against us, and we got to stick together, and we can't divide ourselves. Like, and we got to help each other out. There's no time for, you know, backstabbing or games. It's we just got to start helping each other out.
Yeah, got to get rid of the FUDs. Yep. If you're a FUD, stop being.
So,
gunpowder is gunpowder. It doesn't matter what kind of cartridge it's loaded into and what kind of projectile it's shooting out. It's still gunpowder.
Yeah. You know,
I think it's a lot better today than it has been in the past. But you know, you still hear, you know, certain elements saying, "Oh well, you know, I don't care if they take those guns because, you know, I don't own any of those type of things." So
yeah, you know, we live in a great world. We got podcasts and the internet and Facebook and, you know, of course, Instagram and YouTube, and we can learn knowledge and meet people. And Randy King, who I met in the fall, he just invited me to a whole bunch of his world of self-defense, which was awesome. And he's got his Facebook page, and he just did a blog post about trainers and, you know, the type of trainers that, you know, you want to see, and there's bad trainers and good trainers. And that was an awesome blog post that he wrote. And he also did a little segue into another blog post from maybe we put that in the show notes. It was from her name was Anna, and she gave a woman's perspective of going to take, you know, self-defense course, and just being like, this stuff is not valid, I'll never use this, you know, I'm not going to be fighting another girl, I'm going to be fighting, you know, the 250-pound, you know, guy. And so her view of, you know, from a woman's perspective taking self-defense training, and I was like, that was an eye-opening experience for me, because, you know, I've had a few females in my course, and I had a 70-year-old lady, they showed up with these baby eagles, her and her husband, and,
oh, that's and God awesome. Love them,
and, they're like, oh, we want to, you know, we want to, what do they say? We want to help out the Israelis, so we bought the baby eagles, they said. I'm like, okay.
The Israelis.
And I was just like, ah, but this, it's a tough gun for them to use. And I was just like, but they used it, they felt more comfortable, and they retired, and that was their hobby, was shooting. They've been shooting for about 2 years, and this is the first ever course that they took, and they just had moved to London, and they're like, this is awesome. I'm like, I love you guys. You're awesome. So if you get more people like that, then that's all the better. So.
Yep. All right. Before we close out the interview, anything else in closing before we get on to move on to events?
Is this where you talk about archery again? No? Okay.
You know, it's incredible. I'm always teasing Thomas about his Slamfire comments, and you've surpassed him.
Head over heels. Rick and I talked before the show. Didn't you know that?
Oh, jeez. I love the Slamfire guys, but, you know, this is New Shooter Canada.
Okay, I'm sorry. I'll do it again.
More archery. More archery.
Okay, so I take that as a nothing else to add. Let's move on to events. Thomas, you want to take the first...
I was looking at the University of Calgary Farms Association and the Ontario Hunters Education and Information Association. They actually set up a number of PAL courses. They box a certain section for the UCFA members free of charge. Well, they ask for a donation, but they say it's free. To join the membership, it's only $20 a year. So if you want to learn how to shoot and have a place to shoot with a great group of people, there's some PAL and RPAL courses coming up. When I was speaking to, was it Delano or Eric? I'm not sure. He said they suggest a donation between $50 and $100, but that's still going to be half the price of actually going to a regular instructor and getting your book and everything. So they've got a restricted course coming up January 19th and the 21st. You have to have the non-restricted as a prerequisite. Who keeps scrolling the page on me here?
That was me, sorry.
The location is the Calgary...
I'm working on show notes, so it wasn't me.
Is at the Calgary Conservation Education Center for Excellence at 911 Sylvester Crescent in Southwest Calgary. It runs from 5:30 to 10 p.m. for both nights. As I said, the cost is just an optional donation. And it's at $50 to $100. And because the Alberta Hunters and Education Association is nonprofit, your donations are tax deductible, so you get a receipt for your taxes. Then they have a non-restricted course on January 5th, 7th, and the 12th and 14th. No prerequisite is required. It's at the same above location and at the same times. So if you go into our show notes, you can get all the information. Say for $20, if you live in the Calgary area and you want to get your firearms license, join the association. You have a place to shoot and get to meet some great people.
Okay.
Excellent. Kelly, next one.
Okay, so the...
Because I'm still working on the show notes.
I figured that. So we're going to have our podcasters charity shoot on June 25th. It's going to be in Brockville at the Brockville Fishing and Game Club. So you can contact us here at New Shooter Canada because we're going to be hosting it. And we are going to give you some more information in the new year about all of the excellent stuff that we have planned, both on the Saturday, which is the 25th, and there's also some things that we're trying to arrange for the 26th and maybe on the 24th as well. We're going to have a lot of people coming into town. We have a lot of sponsors that are going to be on site and that as well, and some fun things to do, and that's about it that I really want to talk about that. So
okay.
Alright. Okay, so next event is Project Appleseed in Battle Creek, Michigan, March 5th and 6th. Stacy. Sportsman Club Battle Creek, Michigan. Stacy. Cost is $60. Stacy.
American
range fee for the day will be $5 per day. So how it works is you sign up online for your $60, but then make sure you bring $10 cash with you to cover the range fee. That's going to be separate, and it's paid the day of. Email address is mi@appleseedinfo.org. And I will, as I'm saying this, copy and paste the link into the show notes. Actually, I will copy and paste this whole paragraph into the show notes.
Also, they have, if you can buy the gift certificate right now still, I think, to the end of the month, then you get 20% off if you buy the certificate, and you can use it yourself.
Mm-hmm.
There you
go. And all peace officers, they get in for free. Just saying.
And active military.
And active military as well, yeah.
and it's now in the show notes.
Awesome.
Next is Slamfire Radio, because you know we haven't mentioned them 20 times already. August 6th, Handgun Fundamentals course in St. Paul, Alberta. $200, and there's one spot left. Somebody's grammar is horrible. Contact the guys at Slamfire.
And right. Archery in the afternoon, too.
Mm-hmm. Nice. See, you can go and spend $200 going to St. Paul, Alberta, or you can go to London and spend $20.
Mm-hmm. And then you have to fly all the way out there.
Can you tell you guys a quick little story about Appleseed in Michigan?
Sure.
I hate to throw it out there, but I took the NRA instructor course in Michigan, and somehow the Appleseed thing came up, and they're like, what's that? Appleseed? You guys don't know what Appleseed is? And they're like, no. There's like 30 of them in there. Not one person knew what it was. I'm like,
really?
You guys are in Michigan, and you guys have no idea what Appleseed is. I'm like, oh, dear God. So anyways, next thing you know, the phones came out. They started looking it up, and they're like, oh. I said, yeah, it's like, you know, I said it was like $20, $30, whatever, $60. And they're like, oh, we have to check that out. I'm like, you people, I don't understand how this knowledge hasn't flown down.
It's the Canadian that's telling them about it.
Yeah.
Awesome.
So
I had to, American border guards, I had to explain to them what it was. The guy's like, so what, you like shoot apples into somebody's head or something?
I had the same thing. What's an apple
seed? And I'm looking at the guy, and I wasn't sure if he was joking or if he was serious. And I was like,
nope.
No, not really. You know your independence, that war that you guys fought? It's kind of about
April
19th, that. Look it up.
Or was it the 17th?
So yeah, it's kind of strange.
Yeah, I sort of threw that in there, but
that's awesome.
Yeah. Next is Frontenac is running an RSO course on January 9th. Contact Frontenac directly. info@frpc.ca.
Who's running the course, Kelly?
I don't know who they're going to have to do it, so, but they're...
Contact Frontenac directly at info@frpc.ca.
I'm not just wondering which RO course it was. That's okay. I will contact them directly at
info@RSO course. frpc.ca. Thomas, I'll let you do the listener feedback because it's directed at you.
This is from the post we put on the show about the Weatherby Vanguard, and this comes from Mike from the Reloading Podcast. He suggested go with the Tika Hunter, better quality than the Hawa Vanguard, the same accuracy guarantee with the regular ammo, not the Weatherby ammo. And I agree with Mike, the Tika Hunter is an awesome rifle. It really is. It's much higher quality than the Vanguard, but I was going for a new product that is less expensive for the new shooter, which is why we mentioned that product. But the Tika Hunter, it's a beautiful rifle, nice blued barrel. It's got a nice buttery, one of the nicest actions you'll ever have. The bolt handle's replaceable. It's drill tapped, and it has dovetail grooves across the top. It comes with a beautiful trigger, a 2.5 to 3.5 pound from the factory. I've played with the Tika Hunter before, but your basic Tika Hunter up here has gone up to like $850 compared to $599 for the Vanguard. So that's why we feature the Vanguard. Just cost.
Cool. iTunes, we have none. And Kelly cries herself to sleep because we have none. So please stop Kelly from crying herself to sleep and give us an iTunes.
Yeah,
review.
Give us some likes.
You'll be doing Kelly a great favor. Mm-hmm. Facebook likes 554 and growing.
Yep, just checked. Still 554.
And next. Okay, Thomas, you might have to explain this one. Next week's topic, show topic, mounted shooting, delayed till after Christmas.
Did you get in contact with Krista? Okay,
no.
She messaged me today, and she's busy because of the holidays, and they've got shoots coming up the next couple Sundays, so she asked if we could do it once the December's over, so we'll have her on next month.
Okay, and you know what? Not that I was checking my phone while you guys were talking, but I was. And Jason Philp actually messaged me with another gentleman and his phone number for mounted shooting. So this will work out good because we'll see if we can get a couple people on.
Beautiful.
I'll get in touch with this Stephen guy.
Now, is he out in Alberta?
I would assume so. Jason's
out
there.
Because I think Krista's Ontario.
I don't know for sure. Well, that's good. So give kind of two different provinces perspectives on it.
So at some point, we're going to have managed shooting as a show topic.
Eventually. It's only
who
been,
who
you know,
was the listener that...
In the works for a
who
year
Who was
now.
The listener that asked for it?
Mark and Lynn. It was. I think it was just about a year ago, too. I think it was about this time last year. Mark will eventually get it on, I swear to you. I promise.
I have given George the information. He's been so busy with Big Boy Truck School, he hasn't contacted anybody. That's my story. Right. Sticking to it.
So we will come up with a new topic for next week, then.
Like archery.
If there's something you
want... Archery. Hey.
With crossbows.
I can... The interview's over. I can hang up on you now.
Hey, it's not Trevor. You can't hang up on him.
We need to find something to do in our winter months. Maybe we should talk about archery.
Oh.
I think we've done it. Anyway,
you own a bow, Kelly?
After the show. Anyway, listeners, if there's
thought
something
like
that...
George is having an aneurysm right now.
I'm trying to lead host the show. Here, folks. Come on, let's get this wrapped up. Listeners, if there's something that we haven't covered yet that you want us to cover, Facebook us, email us, get a hold of one of the hosts on Facebook.
Might take a year.
Shush. Host at newshootercanada.ca. Fire us an email, and you know, like Kelly said, it may be a year, but eventually
we'll make it happen.
So, closing comments. As always, we want to thank the sponsors, and we've got a new one, Rick. He was one of the guys from Maple Seed, so I'll be adding him. He's a photographer, videographer, and he has graciously offered to cover the charity shoot.
We got another
us,
one, too.
Taking the pictures. And
yeah, we do.
And, well, I'll let you touch on that one, Thomas, because you were actually the one that set that one up. So, next new sponsor
is... We've got
Thomas.
Steve from Zombie Supply Canada is coming on board, and he'll be donating some stuff for the charity shoot. As I said, we're not going to announce anything that we're doing until... We have everything finalized, but we've got Steve back on board. So thank you, Steve. And we're going to put some links to his company on the Facebook page and the website.
So we'd like to thank new sponsors and current sponsors that have already come on board. We want to thank everybody. Go to the website. There's a sponsor page there, and we have all the sponsors listed there. Visit them. You know, if you're in the market for what they're selling, you know, throw some business their way. They're helping out Soldier On, so we appreciate it. And that's it for me. I don't really have anything else to say.
Okay. So
Kelly.
I just wanted to give a shout out to CCFR on getting their group up and running and all the hard work that everyone's been doing and putting into it. I know that everyone's a volunteer and they're all doing it on their own time. So I just wanted to say good work. And maybe I should get a membership now. I've been waiting to see what's been happening with the group. I'm part of other groups as well, but I just, maybe it's time to sign up and get my own card.
Maybe they'll invite us all to a dinner.
Seriously.
Okay, and we put on the Facebook page, there's the link for the RCMP transportation folder guide. Please print off a copy and put each one in every single gun case, put a copy of this. It's a trifold. Because remember that the police enforce laws, they may not be familiar with the laws. Some assume that non-restricted need to be trigger locked and encased during transport, but this only applies to restricted. So it's better if you have an actual copy of the laws with you from the RCMP just to save yourself some aggravation if you're pulled over. And the other thing I was just going to mention briefly was I was on the University of Calgary Firearms Act, and one of their members, Nick, made an interesting comment because Alberta has put out Bill 110, which is we have the Ontario Human Rights Code. Alberta now has their own Ontario Human Rights Code. And there's a funny thing is that they have, there's each province has their own human rights code.
Just, Just hold on.
So Alberta's instituted the Ontario.
They have the Alberta Human Rights Code. We have an Ontario Human Rights Code.
Okay.
But they have there's something set up in there where it gives explicit provision to make an elementary or high school student, if they want to set up a club or an organization, they must do it. If one student asks for an organization, the school has to do it. So he suggested that the University of Calgary Firearms Association try to set up some shooting sports in some of the high schools. Because the way it's worded, they would have to do it. They find a little loophole in their Alberta human rights. So good luck, you guys. Wow. I'd like to see. That would be great to see if getting some shooting groups in the high schools, and because they would have to follow the human rights code in Alberta.
Okay.
All right. And Mr. Rick, any closing comments?
I'd just like to thank you guys for having me on the show. It's always a privilege to be getting the word out there and promoting other shooting stuff. And I think the podcasts are just an invaluable experience for us all to have at our assets for our training. So thanks, guys, and I appreciate what you guys do. And it's great to have you guys in on the podcast. It's fantastic.
Well, thank you very much. We appreciate you taking the time out for your busy schedule, the baby and Jess, to help us out tonight.
Yeah, any way awesome. You can get away from doing some diapers is great. So.
Oh, yeah, toxic waste.
Projectiles.
Yep.
All right. So, until next week, keep your barrels pointed downrange.
Take your kid shooting.
Keep it classy.
Rick?
I like archery.
Good night, Jess.
Oh, good night, Kelly? Stacey, Trevor. I mean, Owen. Owen.
I miss Bye, Frosty.
Okay. Have a good night, everyone, and we'll see everybody
good night,
next
guys.
Week.
45 lever with the
Winchester tag. I like my double barrel. Thank you for taking the time and listening to our show. Our audience is important to us, and we encourage our listeners to contact the show with feedback, suggestions, or questions that you may have. You can contact the guys at host@newshootercanada.ca. And please like our Facebook page. Thanks for listening, and have a groovy day.
Trying to take our guns off of us, 'cause I ain't gonna shoot anyone, and no one shoots at me, 'cause I got a gun. I like guns, I like the way they look, I like the shiny steel and the polished wood. I don't care if they're big or small, they're for sale, well, hell, I want them all. I like guns, I like guns, I like guns. God made the trees, God made you, well, hell, he even made me. He gave me this voice so I could be a singer. So you tell me why I've got a trigger finger. I like guns, I like the way they look, I like the shiny steel and the polished wood. I don't care if they're big or small, they're for sale, well, hell, I want them all. I like guns, I like guns, I like guns. I like guns, I like guns, I like guns.